This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, for the blackout. Thank you. Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Joe. We'll talk to you coming up here on WWL. Right now, we invite in and welcome Jeff Nowak, the WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer for WWL.com on all things sports and focus on the Saints. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm like right in the middle of like 2-2 from a parade perspective. So I'm Well, I mean, so I went to Ala last night. You know, tonight is Muses, and then I take a day off, and then they got Endymion on Saturday. And you know, it's I live in Mid City, so it's a big one for us, right?
You
know,
we are you on the route for Endymion?
I'm about 2 blocks off Canal. Yeah, so
so you could charge for parking really at your place. Yeah, that'd be good.
yeah. We charge for bathroom access is really the one people need.
How much does it cost to use your bathroom?
It's on a rolling basis of how much I like that person.
Oh, okay. Well, I won't be coming by because I don't want to know what you're going to charge me to use your bathroom. But I do want to know what you think is going on with the Saints. Quarterback getting a lot of obvious attention and for obvious reasons. You know, folks asking what's going on with the quarterback position, but it sounds like we're just getting coach speak and GM speak about, you know, Derek Carr at this point, and we really don't know what the future looks like at quarterback for the Saints.
Yeah, you know, so we're obviously not. I'm not out in Indianapolis, so I wasn't there for the access that some reporters had to Mickey Loomis and Kellen Moore yesterday. I'm going off the same kind of reporting that everyone else is. I have talked to some people about it, but yeah, I mean, what I will say is when we talked to Kellen Moore in his introductory press conference, he was asked directly about Derek Carr, whether he would be the week one starter, and he very much kind of played it down the middle. It was not committal in either way. He was very complimentary of the player, but you know, he had multiple opportunities to say, hey, Derek's going to be our starter and we're going to go with that. He didn't do it. Yesterday when he spoke to the media, he struck a different tone. Mickey Loomis struck a different tone. It sounded very much like Derek Carr would be back. And that always sounded to me like the most sensible option, just being, hey, you don't have a better option on the roster. And any objective metric you look at, it's easy to tell, like, hey, we won games when Derek was on the field. You went 5-5. It wasn't perfect, but you also went 0-7 when he was off the field, right? The options that you would have to bring back are not better, and there's really no immediate cap relief from moving on. So it sounds like there's going to be another season of Derek Carr as the starting quarterback. That could change. You know, maybe something weird happens in the draft. Someone falls to you that you weren't expecting, or a trade appears that, you know, you feel like is a great opportunity and you go get somebody and that changes your perspective. But Derek's $10 million roster bonus is going to come due in March. And if he's not if you haven't made a decision on him by then, it sounds very strongly like he's going to stick around because you can't trade him unless he okays it because he has a full no trade clause. So, it sounds like this is going to be, you know, Kellen Moore was always going to be the biggest factor in terms of if he felt like he could work with Derek Carr and Derek Carr could do the things that he needs that quarterback position to do, then everything else would point to, it makes the most sense to keep Derek, and I think that's where we're headed.
Well, I would have been shocked if Kellen Moore came in and said, yes, Derek Carr is going to be our starter, because he hasn't had the time yet to evaluate all the talent. We haven't had a draft. We haven't had free agency. There haven't been trade opportunities. And so it would be foolish, it seems to me, for him to say who the starting quarterback was going to be, either at his introductory press conference or even now at the NFL Combine, because so much can happen. Plus, you know, you got the guy, and his contract is hefty. He's an expensive player, but that doesn't mean you have to play him, even if you keep him on the roster, right?
Yeah, I don't think you keep Derek Carr around and have him as the backup. You know, I think you're going to play him because even if you draft a guy, it's not going to be, the number one overall pick. They're not going to trade up to the number one overall pick. It's too expensive. So you would need a bridge guy either way, and Derek would be that bridge guy. I really think it was, hey, is Derek the guy or is he not the guy? And if he's the guy, you keep him around and you start him. If he's not the guy, you bite the bullet and you cut him and you move on and you figure everything else out on the back end. I think it's a best case scenario in terms of, okay, can you be competitive this season? Because he's your best option to be competitive this season. I don't know how competitive that's going to be, but when you are a first-time head coach walking into a building, you don't want to sign on. You don't want to co-sign a scenario that's like, hey, our ceiling is 5 wins. Our ceiling is 7 wins. And when you don't have a quarterback that you trust, then that's what you're signing up for. And no coach wants to have their first season be, hey, we're picking at the number one in the draft. Sometimes that happens. You know, sometimes that happens naturally. But I think that's the disconnect between when people talk about the Saints and what the Saints actually do is, no organization in the NFL is making decisions in the offseason saying, how can we lose as many games as possible, right? Every front office is trying to win as many games as possible. And fans might, get annoyed with that because they're like, I want the number one overall pick. That's the only way to get better. No front office is going to operate that way. So that's the disconnect of, like, people are looking at it and saying, how can we get bad enough? And the team is looking at it and saying, how can we get better? How can we win the most games possible? But no, I mean, it wouldn't have made sense for him to come in, for Kellen to come in with declarations of who the quarterback was going to be. All that said, you have now have an offensive staff hired. You have a better vision of what your kind of system is going to be and how you're going to work with these players. You have a quarterback's coach who, you can bounce things off of. You've been able to sit down and meet with Derek Carr. Those meetings sounds like they have gone well. And so here you are. And now it kind of turns to, okay, what else can you do on the roster? I think the defense is going to be a way bigger story for this season than the offense is going to be, because I feel like Kellen can walk into that room and get that offense headed in the right direction. One guy to keep an eye on is Cedric Wilson, who early in this process, the wide receiver they brought in last year, I would have told you he was going to be off the roster. You could cut him and save $2.4 million against the cap. Well, now I look at it and say, Cedric Wilson is a former Boise State Bronco, just like Kellen Moore, spent 4 years in Dallas with Kellen Moore, and I think would be a perfect option to come in and kind of bridge that gap from offense to offense. So those are the type of things that change as you bring in coaches, as you bring in assistants. They have links to certain players. And, I've kind of complete 360, I guess not 360, 180, because he's on the other side, on Cedric Wilson in that regard.
You're not back where you started. You're on the other side. Yes, gotcha.
right. I'm not just spinning in circles.
Saints see Derek Carr as starting QB, a guy we can win with, Mickey Loomis says. That's the name of the article that Jeff has posted at WWL.com right now if you want to read more of his thoughts on this and hear some of the interviews and get more information on Derek Carr as the potential starting quarterback for your New Orleans Saints in the coming season. That having been said, they have neither Mickey Loomis nor Kellen Moore have come out and said that Derek Carr will be the starter, correct?
Yeah, not in so many words, but yeah, I mean, the tone you're striking is significantly different. And it's, I would say that Mickey came out and was a little bit more definitive on the situation than Kellen was. I think that's just how Kellen's going to be. Something we're learning about kind of in real time, because I don't think, obviously we've been exposed to Kellen Moore for a long time. If you followed college football, if you watch any Boise State games, he's won the most games of any college quarterback. So everyone's known about Kellen Moore for a long time. He was a pro quarterback for a while. He's been an offensive coordinator for a while. But none of us have really kind of spoken to him or encountered him. And I think that's how he's going to be as a head coach. He's going to be that kind of play it down the middle all the time guy. He's not going to give a ton away. He's a short answer guy. So I think it has the potential to get a little bit frustrating as we go forward of you just want an answer and you're kind of getting this halfway all the time. But I think from where we're at right now, I feel pretty confident Derek Carr is going to be back.
We're talking with Saints sideline reporter in WWL.com, Saints reporter Jeff Nowak. When we come back, we'll delve more into that discussion that he hinted at about the defense and what's Kellen Moore going to do as the new head coach of the Saints to improve on the defensive side of the ball and make this team competitive and actually hopefully be a playoff team. I'm Dave Cone. If you have any questions or thoughts you want to share with Jeff Nowak, jump on the line at 504-260-1870 or text us on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870. Back with Jeff Nowak after this. I'm Dave Cone in for Tommy Tucker. 925 in for Tommy Tucker. Jeff Nowak is our guest, WWL Saints sideline reporter and WWL writer for WWL.com. Jeff, you talked about the defense maybe needing even more attention than the offense for the Saints. What do you see Kellen Moore doing as the new head coach of this team to address some of the defensive troubles they saw last year?
Yeah, so, I think you're going to see this next season and the next few seasons one of the bigger scheme changes that we've seen this defense have in a long time. Obviously, since Dennis Allen was here, you've had that 4-3 big body defensive ends, press man corner. And I think it's going to be a lot different. They brought in Brandon Staley. If assuming that he's running anything similar to what he ran with the Rams, which, that was the best defense in the NFL in 2020, his lone season there. And then with the Chargers, didn't really work out as well. I don't think the personnel fit quite as well, and it takes a little time to transition, and I don't know if they ever got to what they needed. But that's going to be a change for the Saints, right? And you're out in Indianapolis right now, and you're going to be looking at a lot of players who could potentially come in and get significant time very quickly because you're going to be bringing in guys that can do the things you need them to do. And I think the hires they've made are indicative of that. So if you look at the offensive side, it's all NFL assistants, guys from other NFL rosters, Doug Nussmeier, TJ Paginetti from the Eagles, a few others from around the NFL, Joel Thomas, Brendan Nugent, former Saints coaches coming back. On the defensive side thus far, we've got three hires that we know of, and all three are longtime college assistants. One is Terry Joseph, who spent the last 4 years at Texas. He's a New Orleans native, actually played baseball in college, was drafted by the Cubs before transitioning to football coaching. You've also got Bo Davis, who they just hired today. He was the defensive line coach at LSU at last season, a very widely respected coach. You also have Peter Sermon, who was the defensive coordinator at Cal. He's coming in to coach linebackers. And to me, that's indicative of, hey, the only way we can get better on the defensive side of the ball is by developing young players. And who is better to come in and develop young players than guys who have developed young players in college over the last however many years. I think Terry Joseph is really interesting because, we're going to talk about the combine. You look at the combine, one of the more intriguing kind of zone corner prospects coming out is the 2024 Thorpe winner, who's Jahdae Barron, who Terry Joseph helped develop at Texas over the last 4 years. So, I think you're looking at this situation and you're saying, hey, how are things going to change? And it's tough to see the paths right now until you get the young players in the building, because you have 9 draft picks, you're going to make a lot of them. I would wager that a majority of the picks comes on the defensive side of the ball. And then from there, you're just going to have to figure out what players on the roster can do what do they need them to do in Brandon Staley's scheme.
The Saints have one of the oldest rosters in the NFL in terms of age of players. You noted they have 9 picks. And Mickey Loomis said something interesting yesterday, that they like players who like to be coached. And you talk about the youthful movement, it seems like, through the hiring process in the coaching ranks. Do you anticipate we're going to see a lot more young players, rookies, newly acquired younger players added to this roster and seeing significant playing time?
Yeah, I mean, you'd imagine so. Mickey did intimate yesterday that they were going to be aggressive in free agency and see and maybe be more aggressive than they were last year. I do think it's interesting because one of the reasons they are viewed as this old roster overall is like the average age. But one of the reasons the average age is so high is because, you know, there's not many defenses in the NFL who are relying on 35-plus-year-old players. The Saints are relying on two of them in Cam Jordan and DeMario Davis. Cam Jordan, you can point to and say there's been a significant drop-off. DeMario seems like, you know, he's still playing at a very high level. So it's weird because I feel like they did have a lot of young players on the field for a majority of last season. I mean, you look at that.
Yeah, thanks to injuries, yeah.
Right, thanks to injuries, exactly. But, I mean, most of the season you were starting a rookie across from a 30-year player in Alante Taylor and Kool-Aid McKinstry. Jordan Howard was getting a ton of time. At the linebacker level, you were playing Anthony Orji a lot. Pete Warner's still a young player. So, you know, it's tough because I think the issue is not so much that they don't have young players. It's that they don't have young players that are pushing the older players off the field, right? And so I think that is a big part of it is you need to hit in the draft. It's not just bringing in young players and throwing names and faces at the problem and hoping that fixes it. It's finding the right young players. And when you look at the last four or five drafts, they just haven't done that. Yeah, I mean, there's been so many picks that just have not hit.
Yeah, and you point to someone like, though, DeMario Davis. What'd you say? He's 35 years old? But he doesn't
36.
He doesn't play like a 36-year-old. So I don't know that just looking at the age of your roster really tells you anything. That's obviously one factor. But if you've got older guys, and I say older guys at 36, in NFL terms, older guys, at 36 on your roster who are still productive, then that's not a negative.
Right.
That's a positive.
Right. Well, yeah, you have the 36-year-old, and it's easy to look at the age and say, oh, this is a problem. But what if the 36-year-old is vastly outplaying the 25-year-old that you have that could take over for him, right? Like, that's the issue. At a certain point, there's value in getting a young player on the field to develop them, and that's where you have the Zach Bond paradox of, like, okay, this is an all-pro player. We know that now because he was all-pro this year, but they couldn't get him on the field because they were never willing to bite that bullet and say, hey, we want to get younger. We're going to move on from the veteran, even though they're still playing at a high level. Bobby Abrams says this all the time, and it's a cliche for a reason. You'd rather be 1 year too early on a player than 1 year too late. And I just don't think the Saints have been willing to be 1 year too early on some of these veteran players. And a lot of it goes to the cap. And when you talk about how they manage the salary cap and what's the actual penalty that gives you, because, you know, they can do what they want financially. It's complicated, but they can get it done. The issue that you run into is when you're talking about, hey, we want to move on from a 35-year-old player who's still capable of getting the job done. Well, to do that for the Saints, you would also have to accept, well, we're going to have this massive dead cap hit that we don't have to accept as long as we keep him on the roster. So you end up taking some of these players who you might move on from and keep them around for another year or two. With DeMario, it hasn't been the end of the world, but it did mean you missed out on a Zach Bond because you couldn't get him on the field. They tried to re-sign him. He wanted to go somewhere he would play. Another example, in my opinion, would be Mike Thomas. I think the Saints would have moved on from Mike Thomas a year earlier, but it just did not make financial sense. So you kept him around. You tried to make it work. It didn't. It went down in flames. And then that whole situation blew up and really kind of destroyed your locker room chemistry for that season. So, you know, I do think that when people complain about the salary cap, sometimes I think they look at it the wrong way and they say, like, hey, well, financially, they can't get it done. Financially, they're fine. It's holistically, when you look at the roster, like, why are they so old? Why are they relying on old players at all of these important positions? It's because it's cost prohibitive to move on from them.
And salary cap, obviously the Saints are in a precarious position when it comes to that, but we've seen that in the past where they find ways to do some restructuring, move some money around, and can still be aggressive in free agency and bring in some players. Mickey Loomis said they're going to be aggressive in free agency. Do you see huge acquisitions either through the draft or free agency or trades for this Saints team? Can they get some of these major talents around the league in New Orleans and turn things around quickly?
Yeah, I don't know if that'll be the smart approach. You know, there might be some options to go out and get some guys. You know, they can free up cap space pretty easily. If you look at it, we say $47 million over the cap. If you restructure Derek Carr's contract, which it sounds like you're going to do, that's $30 million of that right there. And then you can get to cap compliance plus about $2 million by only restructuring the obvious easy names, which is Carl Granderson, Cesar Ruiz, and Eric McCoy, which I don't think anyone's going to complain about saying, hey, we're committed to these guys for a few extra years. So from there, any move you make frees up additional cap space. So if you did want to bring in somebody, you could either, you know, ask somebody to take a pay cut. Maybe Taysom Hill is willing to take a pay cut. That frees up some extra space. There's a lot of options you have. If the Saints are being prudent, they will be kind of sticking to this, you know, 1 year deal cycle, maybe a 2 year deal if the numbers make sense. Like last year, you look at, they didn't sign it. I think Cedric Wilson was the only guy who signed a 2 year contract. The year before that, you had a few, and, you know, Colin Saunders, Nathan Shepard, Jamal Williams all signed 3 year deals. Obviously, you also brought in Derek Carr in that big contract. But I do think there's going to be some level of, you just have to be practical about where you are as a team and understand that one big major free agent is not going to change things for you. It's not going to move the needle for you enough to get saddled with a contract that you're not going to want next year. So I think they're going to be willing to spend, but the contracts have to make sense. A guy like Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I think they'd like him back. I think he'd like to be back. But, you know, he's not going to budge on his contract. He's going to want the contract that he feels is merited. So what is that? And what do the Saints feel like they'd be willing to pay? That sort of thing. I don't think there's going to be any major moving, shaking contracts the Saints hand out. But I also don't think they're going to be sitting there saying, oh, we don't have any money, we can't sign anybody, because that's just not true.
You mentioned Taysom Hill. You think he's back in the black and gold, and is he a contributor to this team going forward after the injuries he suffered the last several seasons? We know what he can do when he's healthy, but is he part of the plan moving forward?
Yeah, Kellen did speak pretty glowingly of Taysom when he talked about him in his introductory press conference. He basically said, like, hey, everyone in the NFL has been looking for Taysom Hill. They've been chasing Taysom Hill the last several years. The problem is there's only one Taysom Hill, and he plays for the Saints. And so, you know, that sounds like a guy who's eager to work with Taysom. The issue with Taysom is, you know, you can't just cut him. If you cut him, you're not really saving anything. You could make him a post-June release. You get two of those, and then you can split that cap hit over two seasons. So theoretically, if you did that, you could clear $10 million for this season, but then you would be $10 million dead next year. So I don't know if they really want that $10 million to go do something with, maybe, but I don't know. I think he brings a kind of utility to this roster that, you know, you would definitely lose if he's not here. I don't know if you'd be able to replace it. That I don't know what his role would be in a Kellen Moore offense. I think that's the bigger question, and whether Kellen wants to do that. But I do think Taysom's going to be back wanting to play. He had a pretty significant knee injury. So part of it, I think, is going to be, hey, you're going to go through that rehab process. You're going to get him back on the field, and you're going to be like, okay, what can this guy do? Is that knee really going to be a problem? And if he's not able to contribute at the level that you need him to, then I think that changes the dynamic significantly. I don't think he's going to be a trade candidate. I think it's really going to be that. Is he healthy? Can he get through the offseason program? And from there, do you have a role for him? Because if you're not willing to get him on the field and use him, then he doesn't make sense on the roster, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, no,
he's not going to be a guy that you keep around just to have two or three snaps a game. He's got to be used at the amount he's getting paid. If he's not, then I think he is gone.
Well, and statistically, we saw when he was healthy and he got more than a dozen snaps a game, the Saints' likelihood of winning dramatically increased, and the statistics were very clear, but sometimes he was underutilized and sometimes he was hurt, so we will have to wait and see. All of this being said, and thank you, by the way, for taking a look at the offense, the defense, the salary cap issues, free agency, the draft, and everything else, we're still early in this book. The Saints are only at the combine right now, so we don't know a whole lot of what the future holds through all of these mechanisms. But bottom line, are you feeling that the moves are being made at this point and that the writing is on the wall, that this Saints team has the potential to be significantly better next season?
I think anytime you bring in a new head coach and you get kind of that enthusiasm boosted, you can have a bounce back season. I'm not going to go out and say they're going to be in the playoffs, but I do think they're going to be more fun to watch. And that's the first step to becoming a better football team, is being a fun football team that you watch expecting that team to win and not going in. Kind of Mickey Loomis says that they need to be a team that expects to win, not a team that hopes to win. And I think that's what you need to change if you're Kellen Moore. And I think he has the potential to do that for them.
Jeff, I look forward to reading more of what you have to write at WWL.com and hearing you here on WWL. Thanks for joining us here this morning.
For sure, Dave. Have a good one.
Great Mardi Gras. And, figure out what you'll charge me to use your bathroom during Endymion. He's Jeff Nowak. I'm Dave Cohen. We'll come back and talk about what happens to all the horses that you're going to see in Mardi Gras parades for the next several days, or have seen in the last few parades, because many of those horses are brought in just for the parades. Then what happens to them? Well, you can adopt them. We'll find out more about that coming up after this on WWL. 9:46, Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. Hope you're having a great Friday Eve. You see all those horses in all the Mardi Gras parades? Well, most of them are there just for those parades. They don't belong to the people riding them, so they need a home after Mardi Gras. Rena Sweeney is with the Louisiana Humane Society. Happy Mardi Gras, Rena.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Glad you could join us. You're looking for homes for these horses after the parades are over, huh?
Yes, we are. We're doing great this year. Our program is going to rehome 20. And overall, we are probably going to reach about the 140 horse mark this year in the history of the program.
How does it work? If someone has a desire to get a horse and they have the suitable accommodations for that horse, what do they do to try and keep this horse what do they do to try to save this horse from a fate that would not be good?
Yeah, they can follow us on our Facebook page or our website, MardiGrasHorses.com, and one of two ways. Either they can put in an application that they'll take any horse and they can pick after they're approved, or sometimes people have a specific horse they want. So they would put in an application after looking at all the horses available. And once we've made sure that they have the means, as far as where's the horse going to live, you have a vet and a farrier lined up and all of that, they're approved, and they confirm which horse they're going to adopt. And then after Mardi Gras, they come pick it up and get to take it home.
140 horses over the life of the program that now have good homes, thanks to MardiGrasHorses.com and the Humane Society of Louisiana. A lot of times we hear the term rescued. You rescue these horses. Mm-hmm. That seems to indicate there'd be something wrong with them. Most of the horses I see in these parades, they look healthy, they look happy, they look well-behaved. Looks like a good horse that someone would want to have.
Yeah, typically the biggest issue that we see with these horses coming in, honestly, is that they're underweight a little bit. Not so much so that, they can't be ridden or adopted and worked with, but, they're a little skinny. And so typically once they're in a home and have been fed well for a little bit, they fatten right up and are happy. We just don't know anything about their background. They come from a broker, so they could have wound up there just because, their owner passed away or couldn't care for them anymore for whatever reason, financial, or they moved and didn't have land anymore. We just really don't know. But yeah, a lot of these horses are really great animals and are able to be ridden or be pets. And, some need a little bit of work, but typically with a trainer, that's something that they can handle.
MardiGrasHorses.com is the website if you want a horse and you can accommodate that horse. Now, it's not entirely free. You're not just going to give these people the horse. There are some costs associated with the program that they have to cover, right?
Yes. So the adoption fee really is just going back to compensate the stable for what they paid the broker to get the horse out of the system, essentially. We are not making money off this. The Humane Society of Louisiana is running this program just with volunteers, and, any expenses incurred are covered from donations. So you're really just kind of helping to, again, cover the cost of getting that horse out of that system that it will never go back into. Once they are in our program, we're committed to them for the rest of their life.
About how much money are we talking?
The adoption fees typically range around $700 to $1,500, depending on the horse.
All right, and that's a lot less than it would cost to buy a horse through more traditional means, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, also, I feel like if you're getting a whole horse, that's a great deal, isn't it? Some people pay that much for a dog.
Yeah, we talked around it a little bit, but this program was founded for a reason, and the Humane Society got involved for a reason, because there were questions and concerns about the future of the horses that we see in these Mardi Gras parades. What was happening to these horses?
So typically, they are purchased from a broker. They would come in, be used for Mardi Gras, and then be sold back to the broker. And there is a market, unfortunately, for horse meat. And so their future being uncertain meant that they could have maybe gone to a home, or they could have gone for slaughter. And we found out that quite a few were having that happen, and we were just floored. We had no idea that when we're out on the parade route enjoying things, that these are not people's pets that they're riding. And so we felt like it was our responsibility to step in and make sure that these animals were going to be safe and go into a loving home after they serve our community in a way that's so important to the culture here.
Do they still use horses to make glue? Is that a real thing? Do they send horses to the glue factory, or is that just something that we hearken back to?
I actually don't know about that, but man, okay. I would hope that is not true.
Because Elmer's glue seems so innocent. I would hope that's not the case. All right, Rena Sweeney, thank you so much for joining us from the Humane Society of Louisiana. Again, the website is MardiGrasHorses.com. Have a great rest of your Mardi Gras celebration, Rena.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. We're checking the text line at 504-260-1870. See what you've got to share on the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text line up next. And we'll check in with Newell Norman. See what he's preparing for the next 3 hours here on WWL.